Hey everyone, this is Josh, the pastor at Church on the Drive. Welcome back to the Church on the Drive podcast. Hey, at the end of this episode, please take a moment to subscribe to our YouTube channel and follow us on Facebook or Instagram. These are the easiest ways to share our content with a friend, and it's the easiest way to stay up to date with what's happening at Church on the Drive. Most importantly, though, I hope the following presentation inspires you to take your next step in your faith journey. Enjoy. This is more of a PG-13 sermon, so if you've got little kids with you, don't worry, I'm not going to say something crazy, but just heads up, if you want to step out, no big deal. You know, when I was younger, I never even thought about being a parent, like never. Some of y'all, you grew up thinking to yourself, man, I can't wait to be a mom. I can't wait to be a dad. And you had all these dreams, like you were 8 years old dreaming about playing catch with your 8-year-old. You know what I mean? Never even crossed my mind. Not on my radar at all. Never thought about it. For whatever reason, it wasn't a priority in my brain. As a kid, as a teenager, as a college student, just didn't think about it. But now I'm really happy because I get so much joy from my children. I love my children, man. They bring me so much happiness. They are so good. You know what I mean? Like just inherently good. They bring that to me. When I come home, they're there, and my 2-year-old is like, "Daddy's home," and then the 4-year-old, "Daddy's home," and the 7-year-old, "Daddy's home." Like it's great. It's this wonderful feeling, and maybe it's a little bit selfish, but I really like it, you know. And they don't care so much about all of my feelings. You know, I say sorry when I do the wrong thing, or I raise my voice or something. You do all of that sort of thing. You try to teach them along the way, but they're so loving when they're forgiving you. You know, I say, "Hey, I'm sorry that I did that," or something, or I bumped into the 2-year-old the other day by accident. I did this number, and I didn't know she was there, and she fell down. She starts crying. I was like, "Oh, I'm so sorry. Come here, come here." And her new thing is to grab my face, like right here on both my cheeks, and just plant a big fat one right on me, man. Just boom. Oh, man, your heart melts, but you know, it's like juicy. You know what I'm saying? There's tears. There's probably some bugs going on in there. You know, it's all kind of nasty, right? But you're taking it. You love your kids. But the other day, it finally happened. They played that one card that every kid ultimately plays. We were getting them ready for school, and so I've got the 3 girls by myself. Camille has left for work because she's a hardworking nurse. Shout out, nurses. Thank you for all that you do. This is early, and I've got them doing something. I honestly cannot even remember what it was that I asked them to do, but I said, "Hey, this is what we're doing," and they said, "Well, Mom said this." And so I did the quick mental calculations. I did all the math, and I had the relational math. I did it all real quick, and I came out with the only answer I had ever heard and the only answer I knew to give. "Your mama's not here." "Your mama's not here, but I'm telling you that we're going to do this." I wish you could have seen the look on their faces. I wish you could have. It was like, "How dare you question the queen of our house? She's going to hear you. There's probably a camera somewhere. What are you doing?" Oh, no. They were not. They were like, "But seriously, Dad, like, Mom said." And I was like, I know, but I'm saying this. I'm the king of the castle." They didn't care. They didn't care too much about that. Today, we're continuing a series that we are calling "But I Tell You." And this is a series all about how Jesus comes on the scene. And before he's ever this rock star minister guy, before he's ever this itinerant rabbi going away and going around and blowing everybody's minds, before he's walking on water and doing all this crazy stuff that everybody hears about, before he does any of that, he gets up on the side of a hill, calls his followers to him, the ones that he had, and he starts this sermon, this long sermon, and by most accounts, probably the greatest sermon ever given. And to kick off this sermon, he starts off with these 6 statements. And they all have this formula. They say, "You have heard it said," and then he says the thing. And he goes, but I tell you. And the thing that he's talking about, like you have heard it said, is something that everybody who was religious knew, and everybody was religious in those days. So they had heard these things over and over and over again in their life. And so he would say, you have heard it said, things like don't murder. Well, everybody can get on board with that. They knew God didn't want anybody murdering. They knew that God didn't want that to happen. And then he would say, but I tell you. So last week we talked about murder. And what we came down to was this, that Jesus, as this fuller image of who God is saying, look, what God is really after when it comes to not murdering is that God's people shouldn't be angry with each other and that we should seek peace. Like our job is to make peace, because if we can make peace, that honors God. So and here's how we got there. Jesus kicks off this part of the sermon. He says this, do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. That's like everything you read in the Old Testament, law and prophets. That's what they're referring to. He says, I've not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. And so often, as followers of Jesus especially, but even if you're not, we get to there and we say, okay, Jesus shows up. That means the Old Testament is done for. Let's throw it over there. We don't even need to look at it anymore. But that's not Jesus' approach. Basically, what he's saying is everything back there in the law and the prophets, all that stuff about don't murder, all of the prophecies, all of that stuff, that's all pointing to me. I, in my person, Jesus, am the fulfillment of all of that, which is a very brash, audacious statement. It's a very brash, audacious statement. Almost as much audacity as a dad saying, but your mama's not here. No. The sheer audacity of this statement should hit you, because he is challenging, in effect, what everybody believed and what everybody understood and what everybody bought into. He says, you have heard it said, but I tell you, and here's why he's saying is because he's come to fulfill all of that stuff. Basically, what he's saying is all those laws and all those prophecies, all that stuff that you know and you've heard and your mama taught you and you sang songs about at school and all that stuff, those are all brushstrokes on a larger canvas that is a painting of me. And it's not until you zoom back and see the beautiful picture right there in front of you that you can understand what those brushstrokes are doing. So Jesus is showing the deeper intention of God's will for God's people here. He's giving a new Torah, if you will, a new Torah for God's new people, the followers of Jesus. And so we talked last week about murder. Jesus goes on after that and keeps saying stuff. There's six of these. Here's the second one. He says this, you have heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. That's a pretty good one. Everybody agreed with this one. Everybody was like, yeah, this is a big deal. This is a pretty big deal. Now, generally in those days, adultery was seen as, just one spouse cheating on another spouse. It was usually enforced, though, only on the women, rarely on the men. Funny how that works in an ancient patriarchal society, isn't it? But Jesus says, you've heard it said, don't commit adultery. Everybody liked this rule because adultery back then and still today tears lives apart. There's no other way to say it. It tears lives apart. I mean, today, if you've ever known somebody who committed adultery or whose family had adultery committed within it, or maybe you were part of one of those relationships, you know this, that it tears lives apart. There's nothing great about it. Now, God can redeem even the darkest of moments, but it still tears things apart and ruins things. Jesus knew that. We know it. Everybody listening to Jesus knew it. I mean, think about the world that Jesus existed in. It wasn't like today where we have these massive cities where you could just go be anonymous. Most people lived in smaller towns and villages. Imagine what happens when adultery takes place there, because these people, half of them are related to each other somehow. Most of them have known each other since birth, and they have these really intertwined community relationship things going on. Everybody knew. This was like your extended family. Imagine a village of 200 people, and then adultery happens. People choose sides. People have to figure out what the punishment is. Should there be a punishment? What do we do to this person? What does it say to our kids? We got to do something. We don't want to send the message this is okay. You can see this tears lives apart, and it ruins things for generations. It still tends to do that today. It's a good thing to live by. Don't commit adultery. But as we've seen already, Jesus is not content to leave it there. Don't commit adultery. This is a brushstroke. He wants to show us the bigger picture, the deeper intention. So he goes on. He says, But I tell you that anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart. So he's talking to the guys right here, right? He's talking to the dudes in the crowd. He says, hey, if you're looking at a woman lustfully, you've already committed adultery. So while the women were usually the ones in his era who were punished for the adultery more than anybody else, he's looking at the guys saying, don't even look at them lustfully. Don't even think about it. Now, when we read that word lustfully, the word that's used there has this connotation of lingering while you're looking. So hopefully, maybe what you can imagine in your mind's eye is somebody who is leering and looking at it. I know some of you women have experienced this in your life where there's some creep just leering at you. That's what Jesus has in mind. But Jesus didn't live in a time when the internet was prevalent. We do. Some of us, we know, men and women, leer at other people on the internet, don't we? We know that people are sitting there scrolling through Instagram, scrolling through TikTok, scrolling through Facebook, and they're leering at people. They're allowing their initial attraction to another person to linger and get deeper and darker and more fantastical. And Jesus is saying, if you're doing that, if you're looking lustfully, you've already committed adultery. Now, he's mainly talking to the guys, which is an important thing to notice. Because what he's saying to them is, you are responsible for your lust. You are responsible in this moment. He says, you've already committed adultery with her in your heart. Well, you know, the thing is, when he's talking about the heart, he's really referring to thoughts. And all sin starts out in our thoughts, doesn't it? The difference is, what do we do with those thoughts? Do we allow ourselves to linger there? Do we allow ourselves to hang out in that moment? Or do we change direction? Every single person here has had some kind of attraction to somebody else who isn't your spouse. Like you look, you can admire somebody and say, oh, wow, that person is beautiful. That person is very handsome. Let's call a spade a spade. But no person here is allowed to linger in that and act upon it. The difference is, are you allowing yourself to linger in that thought, to linger in that moment? Or are you moving on? Jesus is very serious about this. And to show us how serious he is, he says it this way. He says, look, if your right eye causes you to stumble, gouge it out. That's not the peaceful, loving Jesus I know. Gouge it out. It's better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. And yes, he means hell. He's very serious about this. What I need you to understand, he says the same thing about the right hand, by the way, just after this. He says the exact same thing. He says, so gouge out your eye, chop off your right hand, if that's what it takes to keep you from falling into this lustful desire. The right eye was the prominence eye, right? This is the one that was a vision thing, and they believed that it was a sign of prominence and domination. So that if that was the one that was gouged out, you were going to be humiliated. Same thing with your right hand. Everybody worked with their right hand, did everything with their right hand. If you don't have the right hand, this is a sign of humiliation. This is you putting yourself at the mercy of everyone else around you. Jesus says, I want you to go to extreme measures, if you have to avoid lingering in that lust. Now, just like he did with murder, he's exaggerating here. He doesn't really want you to pluck your eye out. He doesn't really want you to chop your hand off. But he does want you to be willing to go to extreme measures to avoid falling into the temptation of this sin. It means a lot. This stuff means a lot. That's why he talks about the eye. That's why he talks about the hand. I grew up at a time when there was this thing that we now refer to as the purity culture. You remember this? If you're about my age, you maybe remember there's this whole purity culture movement. And so it was largely pretty good. Like, they were saying, hey, listen, like, save sex for marriage. It's only for within the confines of marriage. That's when that should happen. So abstinence is the way to go. Nothing outside of that. And so we'd have like all these true love waits programs at our schools. You had to sign your little pledge card. Maybe you even got a promise ring, or definitely got a t-shirt at every single one of these things. You did all this stuff. But it would go off track a little bit because women a lot of times became the scapegoats for dudes who couldn't control themselves, or should I say wouldn't control themselves. So like I remember going to church camp, and there was the pool, and the guys and the girls could not swim at the same time. No, no, no. And the guys, we just went out there in like our swim trunks, just like normal. But the girls showed up, and they had to have on a one-piece bathing suit and a dark-colored shirt over the top. And I said, that doesn't seem fair. And they go, yeah, but, you know, modest is hottest, Josh. I said, not to me. I'm 14. Oh, man, I remember seeing it like this, and maybe you experienced the same thing, where like where girls were made to bear the weight of many guys' inability to control their desire, their lust. And they say, well, you know, be a good sister to him. And like, well, what happened? Jesus, in these verses, seems to be telling us that it's our job to control our own lustful desires, that it's nobody else's job to control them for us. Jesus makes it clear that you are responsible for your lust. Somebody else is not responsible for that necessarily. Even in Jesus's day, they had laws and rules in place and regulations put into place because the men of the era said, hey, listen, these women are causing us to stumble. They're causing us to have problems and issues here. So let's make them wear more clothes and don't come out in certain times, right? But what they didn't anticipate was that men would just change their standard of what beauty was. So it went from being, you know, something as crazy as, man, she looks great in that bikini, to she's got some nice ankles. Right? Love those eyebrows. You go, girl. They just changed their standards. Like, here's what it is. When all along, Jesus is standing back going, no, this is on you. This is your problem. You need to deal with it. Don't make other people have to change. You got to figure out, because it starts with, you're the only one who can control what you allow yourself to continue thinking about. You're the one who needs to look away. You're the one who needs to move on and do something else. You're the one who has to do this. Now, you might be wondering, why does Jesus even care about this? Why is it that Jesus cares at all? I think it's because it has huge consequences. This whole idea of lust and lingering within this desire has huge consequences. First, from a spiritual perspective, right? We talk about sex. From a spiritual perspective, this is a gift to us from God for within the confines of marriage, because within marriage, we truly become one flesh. That's what sex does. It shows us. It's the bringing together of two people. It's one flesh. We imprint on each other, even in our neurons, right? We come together as this one flesh. Well, what I say in every wedding I do, I always say, look, no matter what we do, you're a one flesh here. This is the idea that we're coming together. We're covenanting together here. If you truly did become one flesh right now in this moment, then no matter how much we pushed and pulled and sliced and diced, we would never be able to extricate you fully from each other ever again. That's the reality. And we're learning more and more scientifically that this is a physical reality with people. That the sexual partners we have, like we imprint on each other that way. And so when we take that one flesh relationship outside of marriage and try to have it with someone else, our body and our mind and our heart is confused because that's not how we're wired. But also we're thumbing our nose at the God of the universe and saying, I know you gave us this marriage covenant, but I like this better. I like my way better. That's the spiritual perspective. Let's talk about the human perspective. Just from a human perspective, you're treating another person as a piece of meat. You're treating them as an object of your desire, an object that gets to be maneuvered to however you want them to be maneuvered. You're using them as something for your fantasy or something to be maneuvered around in for your own pleasure and for what you think is good when you're sitting and just lustfully looking at them. There's nothing wrong with desiring your spouse. There's nothing wrong with looking at them and lingering in that thought and loving them like that. There's nothing wrong with that at all. But when it's somebody who's not your spouse, what you're doing is you're fantasizing. You're trying to get them to be somebody, at least in your brain, that they may not ever be. You're treating them like a piece of meat. And friends, every person you've ever met is much more than that. Every person you've ever seen is much more than that. They are people made in the image of God. They're God's children. They're deeper. They're deeper than that. That's the human perspective. The practical side of things is this, that you ruin everything for everybody around you when you fall into this. Right? Whether if you linger in this lust for too long, comparison becomes a trap. The person you ultimately marry or are married to, they can't live up to all the fantasies you have in your brain. This is why pornography becomes such a big deal, by the way. They're doing more and more studies that young men and young women who are getting married in their late 20s and early 30s who've been watching pornography for a long time, like they're not having great intimacy because they can't. Their brains have been rewired to think it's supposed to be like they've seen in these movies. And then there's what unchecked lust kind of leads to sometimes. There's adultery. If you've ever known somebody who's had one of those, an adulterous relationship like that, you know what I'm talking about. It ruins everything. It ruins everything for everybody around you. It ruins for your children and your children's children and maybe even your children's children's children. It ruins for your friends, for your community. We've seen this happen. So if I could just be so bold, if you ever find yourself lingering in some kind of lustful desire moment, if you ever find yourself falling into that ever, if you even think like there's these flirty texts going back between you and somebody at work, I need you to do me a favor and stop. Stop. For the love of all that is holy, please stop. Run away from it. Find yourself somebody you can talk to, whether it be your spouse, whether it be a trusted friend, somebody that you can talk to and confess this to. You've got to stop it because it will ruin everything. And not just yours, not just your life, your spouse's life, your kids' lives, your family. Here's the thing. If you're married, you're endangering your life and the lives of those around you. But this isn't just for those of you who are married. We're talking about adultery. But I think because we're talking about sex within, outside the confines of marriage, we can also include those of you who aren't married. Like, if you're doing this and you're practicing just kind of lingering in that lust and leering at people, whether it be in person or online, friends, you're setting yourself up for failure later with your spouse. If and when you ever do get married, you're setting yourself up for failure later. you don't want to do that. You're going to love that person. You're going to give every part of yourself to that person. So be willing to do that. Now, run away. So here's my advice. When you find yourself in a situation where you're kind of lingering in that lust or leering at another person, looking at someone lustfully, this goes for men and women. Change where you're at. Change what you're doing. So for some of us, that might be you're out at the mall or something like that, and you're walking around, and there's somebody sitting near you who's very attractive, and you find them, and you keep finding yourself looking over there. Get up and walk away. Go somewhere else. Do something else. If you work with somebody, and there's that temptation there, don't let yourself be alone with them. Don't text with them unless it's about work. Don't talk to them that way. You got to figure out what those boundaries are. This may make me sound super old, and I'm sorry, but it's just the only thing that seems to work, I think. Maybe for you, it's a little bit different. You've got, you know, Instagram and TikTok and all this stuff where people will show all parts of their bodies on there, and you find yourself scrolling, and maybe once or twice you've given in, and now your algorithm shows all of this, and it keeps coming into your feed, and you can't get away from it. Let me tell you something. I've known people who just deleted apps. Just totally, like, they got off of the social media altogether because of it. Maybe that's what you need to do. I don't know. All I know is Jesus says it's better for you to gouge out your right eye and chop off your right hand than to allow yourself to fall victim to that. Because it ruins everything. And I want you to remember this. When you find yourself lusting and leering and maybe even falling into adultery, ultimately what you're doing is you're saying you don't have enough, that you are experiencing lack. The truth is, God wants to be enough for you. God wants to be enough for you. And the deeper truth is that God is enough for you. You just got to recognize it. So that's where I want to end it today. I want you to remember this, if you don't remember anything else. God is enough. Your spouse is enough. Nothing else will be. You can keep searching. You can keep running after it. You can keep trying all this stuff. It'll never be enough. You keep giving into that, it'll never be enough. God will always be enough. And that commitment you make to a spouse, that's always enough. We have to put our eyes on Jesus. We have to put our eyes on Jesus. Take our eyes off these other things. Put your eyes on Jesus. Move forward following him.